This is Sarah Stewart Holland.
And this is Beth Silvers.
Thank you for joining us for Pantsuit Politics. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pantsuit Politics. We are here today talking about the 5-year anniversary of the Me Too movement. We're going to spend some time on the silence breakers, the women who came forward and shared their stories. We're going to spend some time on the perpetrators, the powerful men who fell from their lofty positions over the course of this movement. We're going to talk about what has happened, both concrete consequences and more amorphous cultural changes. And at the end of the show, as always, we'll talk about what's on our mind outside politics. And as Halloween rapidly approaches, it is candy. Candy is on our mind.
Before we get started, we want to continue to thank you profusely for being part of this big, extensive birthday party we're having. We are now 3 episodes out from our 7th birthday here at Pantsuit Politics. So many of you are participating in our challenges, and we are thrilled about it. And this should be an easy one, okay? Today, the challenge is just to talk to 3 humans with your face and voice about Pantsuit Politics. And we know that many of you do this all the time. We get your emails where you say, people think Sarah and Beth are my real-life friends because I mention them so often, and we appreciate that. We really do. And we want to reward you with some party favors for that activity. So talk with 3 people in real life. Go to our website, fill out the form to say, yes, I did this. And we will give you another entry into the drawing for that Pantsuit Politics time capsule, along with our eternal gratitude.
Because what we're trying to do with this birthday celebration is grow the show. And y'all know that nothing works as well as an in-person recommendation. There are so many podcasts out there, guys. And one of the best ways to sort through them is to go, oh, you know what? My friend was telling me about this Pantsuit Politics podcast. I'm going to go listen to it. So we appreciate all your recommendations. Up next, we're going to talk about the Me Too movement.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between 2 cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
You know how you learn to really appreciate how good your products are? Leave town and get stuck with whatever shampoo is in the hotel. I take Pros and their custom hair products for granted, y'all. Pros is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. From millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely yours or mine. I never found beauty products that really understood my needs. But ever since I switched to custom hair and skin routine with Pros, I've noticed so many benefits. My thin hair is moisturized but not weighed down, and my waves have never looked better. And Pros isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. Pros is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/pantsuit. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/pantsuit. That's PROSE.com/pantsuit. Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting. As we think about the 5-year anniversary of Me Too, let's talk about where it all started. Many trace the birth of the Me Too movement to October 15th, 2017, when actress Alyssa Milano tweeted the hashtag activist Tarana Burke had created almost a decade earlier. The post went viral, in the truest sense of the word, with 12 million responses on social media in 24 hours, largely of women sharing their own experiences with sexual assault and sexual harassment and tagging the post, hashtag MeToo.
10 days earlier, actress Ashley Judd had publicly accused Harvey Weinstein of sexual harassment in the New York Times.
If I could go back retrospectively with a magic wand and say, I wish I could prevent it for anyone always, I don't know that I would have been believed. And who was I to tell? I knew it was disgusting.
And that storm had been brewing for a while. We had had Taylor Swift's successful suit against a radio DJ who groped her.
Swift was called to the stand by the attorney for former radio DJ David Mueller, the man she says groped her backside backstage at her 2013 concert.
Just a couple months before, in August 2017, we had had the earth-shattering ouster of Roger Ailes at Fox News during the summer of 2016 because Gretchen Carlson had come forward with allegations against him.
Roger Ailes, the architect of the Fox News Channel, just now resigning as chairman and CEO of Fox News Channel and Fox Business Network, and also as chairman of Fox
Television. And so all of this had been in the works, and Alyssa Milano really met the moment with that tweet.
That movement took off last weekend when Alyssa Milano highlighted it on Twitter, posting, "If you've been sexually harassed or assaulted, write Me Too as a reply to this tweet."
At the end of 2017, Time magazine named Silence Breakers as the persons of the year, really elevating the movement even further. They put Judd and Swift activist Adama Iwu, strawberry picker Isabel Pasquale, and former Uber engineer Susan Fowler on the cover of the magazine. And so, to me, that's the image that sort of encompasses this moment. But I'll tell you, as I was looking back on that time, it's such a swarm. There was so much happening sort of before, at the time, after, that it all sort of merges in my head as sort of this one moment. And I think that's reflective of what happened with Me Too. Is it just started to balloon and balloon and balloon and hold everything. It just holds so much. It holds sexual assault. It so holds sexual harassment. It holds all of these particular developments inside the media industry, but also affecting even low-income wage workers at McDonald's. So it felt so huge and amorphous. And even as I look back 5 years later at that time, it still feels that way. It still feels that way.
We think about what's come of that amorphous movement that I agree with you, Sarah, feels like it encompasses everything from some of the most shocking and pervasive episodes of sexual violence in the workplace to garden variety misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
We see some fruit of that movement. President Biden signed this year the Ending Forced Arbitration of Sexual Assault and Sexual Harassment Act. Gretchen Carlson has been championing this legislation for years now because employees, she says, should have the choice to go to court to pursue sexual misconduct claims instead of being required to arbitrate in these private settings that are very favorable to employers. Gretchen Carlson isn't done, though. And she and her nonprofit that she founded are taking on non-disclosure agreements with the Speak Out Act that has been introduced with bipartisan support in the House and Senate, because she has never been able to fully tell her story due to a non-disclosure agreement that she is bound to. And she would like other women and other victims of workplace harassment and violence to be able to tell their complete stories. And we've had her on the show to talk about that before. So we'll link that episode here in the notes.
The amorphous nature of the movement, I think, is reflective of the fact that it really wasn't a political movement in any traditional sense, right? It wasn't organized. It didn't have defined goals. I think Gretchen Carlson and her group have been so successful because they did. Mm-hmm. They did have very defined goals. I think you see sort of the implosion of Time's Up. Time's Up was the group started by many Hollywood actresses to continue to fuel and continue the work of Me Too. But again, what I just described is amorphous. I think Time's Up goal was amorphous, and it has really imploded in sort of spectacular fashion. While at the same time, the Legal Defense Fund set up has been really successful and has, you know, funded lots and lots of sexual harassment cases, from McDonald's cashiers to NFL cheerleaders, and the financial resources are still there and still being used. And again, but that's like a defined goal. And so I think that's what's hard. I think that some of the, in some ways, siloed work of the Me Too movement has been successful. But the Me Too movement was cultural almost more than it was political. And when you're trying to talk about or measure cultural impact, cultural successes, well, that's a lot harder to do. And I think you see that. I mean, you had pushback almost immediately culturally. When I was looking back through Me Too timelines, I was struck that, you know, there was a letter pushing back against Me Too from, it's like Catherine Deneuve and many French sort of celebrities, and like January of 2018, really soon after everything started. So you saw that immediately. And I think that's to be expected when something is largely cultural, hugely viral, and amorphous in sort of definition and goals. I think that is inevitable. And so that, to me, as we're looking back over these 5 years, that's not a sign of failure in any way, shape, or form. It's just a reflection of the nature of what Me Too was from the beginning.
I remember about Time's Up when Oprah talked about Time's Up at an award show.
The Golden Globes, when she got the Cecil B. DeMille Award.
For too long, women have not been heard or believed if they dared to speak their truth to the power of those men. But their time is up. Their time is up. So I want all the girls watching here now to know that a new day is on the horizon. And when that new day finally dawns, it will be because of a lot of magnificent women, many of whom are right here in this room tonight, and some pretty phenomenal men fighting hard to make sure that they become the leaders who take us to the time when nobody ever has to say Me Too again. Thank you.
I can almost remember in my body what I felt like when Oprah said that, and recognizing that we were in a new era and that that era would have a real gravitational pull, that it would open up some of the worst of our society even as it was advocating for us to do better. That's always the case, and it's certainly been the case with this movement. So it's encouraging to step back and look at some of the legislative wins that have been accomplished. And it makes me appreciate the work that Gretchen Carlson's group has done even more to see how critically important it has been to focus on what can we do on a societal level, because all the backlash to the Me Too movement individualizes what the movement was trying to call out as a communal problem. And so where you see that legislation moving forward, and why I think that legislation is popular on a bipartisan basis, is because it really does get to those structural forces instead of trying to ask all of us situation by situation to be judge and jury of how someone felt or what someone did and how someone else interpreted those actions.
And also, some of this can't be solved structurally. And I think that's what we bump up against and battle through when we talk about Me Too. As a woman, everything feels different and also the same. And I think that's what's hard and heartbreaking about both the movement and where we sit 5 years later. It's hard to sit and talk about the Me Too movement and its successes when we're living in a post-Roe America. You know, like, that's just really, really difficult. And in some ways, I think about that moment in time and all the stories that have broken and that feeling of, oh my God, there's going to be some justice, real justice. And that can't be taken away. That feeling of things are being said that haven't been said and people are being held to account that have never been held to account before. Like, that moment you felt the realness of that cannot be taken away. It just can't. Once that is available to you, it's something you can't unknow. No matter how many of the accused go on to careers, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about sort of the perpetrator side of Me Too in a moment. But you just can't undo that. And at the same time, the reason that moment is so powerful is because our culture is so infiltrated with patriarchy and sexism and misogyny and racism as an accelerant or companion, as the case may be, to all of those things. And I just don't want to get stuck in this binary, especially around an anniversary of a movement like this, where it's like, it's either thumbs up or thumbs down. It was a success or it was a failure. It was the reason I think it's so important to emphasize how big it was and how much it contained is to emphasize, like, that's not available here. To do this sort of, it was a smashing success or it was a complete failure. It's just, you can't do that with something like Me Too. That was so intensely cultural, continues to be an ongoing cultural conversation, societal conversation. And we're just going to have to learn to hold that. I think that's part of what Me Too taught us to do, is to hold the complexity of these moments and these interactions at all ends of the scale. We're not going to get there in 5 years. We're not going to get there in 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, at which point I think we will still absolutely be talking about the Me Too movement and its impact.
Yeah, it's an unrealistic expectation for a society that probably can't yet agree on where there is, that we would accomplish everything that one might hope from the Me Too movement, because it involves undoing all of human history and the way that we thought about each other and about relationships. I'm taking this class at my church about the theology around the LGBTQ community. And we are really dissecting the pieces of scripture that people use to classify specifically gay and lesbian relationships as sinful and seeing them in the broader context of that era of humanity. And it really drives home how far we have come, that women are no longer property, that sex has any expectation of being consensual, or for any purpose other than procreation. And so in some ways, I try to hold a sense of celebration that here I am in a class where a woman pastor is talking to me and our church members, many of whom are gay and lesbian, about this historic context. And I still feel the frustration of, I cannot believe we still have to talk about this. And I can't believe that we are still seeing internet conversation about whether there is some right to sex in America. I mean, a lot of the dialogue post Me Too has felt especially off the tracks to me. And I just have to remember that that is part of that pendulum swinging where we have a tendency to overcorrect in every direction, and finding some kind of equilibrium is the central challenge of being a person living in community with other people.
I will say this, 5 years later, we started this conversation really centering the women who came forward and told their stories. Consciousness raising in the purest sense of the word. It was consciousness raising for me as a woman who has not had direct experience with sexual harassment in a workplace or sexual assault. I was shocked and heartbroken by how many stories I heard, by how many experiences, just the breadth and depth of what we heard from many of you emailing us at the time. And I have absolutely no doubt that if it was impacting someone like me, it was impacting and continues to impact so many others. And I have absolutely no doubt that as we sit here in a post-Roe America where women are pouring out their hearts and their stories surrounding reproductive justice, that we have Me Too to thank for that. That level of consciousness raising doesn't stay contained. It doesn't stay just on the subject we started sharing about. And so as heartbreaking as it is to feel like, oh, we took this step forward with Me Too, now we're taking a step back with Dobbs, they're connected. This idea that, no, you will not silence me. You will not silence me. I will tell what happened to me, and you will listen. The power of that cannot be understated. It cannot be understated, no matter what happens next.
Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, and Hyacera is that once daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I am 43, and she said, I cannot believe how young you look. And I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
You know how you learn to really appreciate how good your products are? Leave town and get stuck with whatever shampoo is in the hotel. I take Pros and their custom hair products for granted, y'all. Pros is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. From millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely yours or mine. I never found beauty products that really understood my needs, but ever since I switched to custom hair and skin routine with Pros, I've noticed so many benefits. My thin hair is moisturized but not weighed down, and my waves have never looked better. And Pros isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. Pros is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/pantsuit. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/pantsuit.
That's PROSE.com/pantsuit.
In previous episodes, I have outed myself as a bed-making fanatic. I am very serious about my bed being an oasis, a gift to Chad and me as we crawl into it at the end of a long day. So I want to return to how much I love my Boll & Branch sheets. With Boll & Branch sheets, you can discover a new level of softness. The sheets are made from 100% organic cotton in a buttery, breathable weave that truly gets softer every time you wash them. And you know that I like to do that once a week, so my Boll & Branch are rapidly aging like a fine wine. The sheets look great. I have them in a beautiful slate color. They stay put, so making my bed is quick and easy. They are a bestseller for a reason. The signature sheets feel incredible on night one. They are loved by millions of sleepers, and they come with a 30-night worry-free guarantee. Sleep better at night with the softest sheets from Boll & Branch. Get 15% off your first order when you use promo code PANTSUIT at BollAndBranch.com. That's Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com, promo code PANTSUIT. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
We consciously centered the experiences of the victims and the silence breakers and the activists. But unfortunately, much of the conversation surrounding Me Too has centered the experience of the perpetrators. And I don't think they're irrelevant. And it was in the same ways that the stories being told were impactful. Watching the powerful be called to account was also hugely impactful. And it's like, again, reviewing sort of the history of that moment in time is intense. You know, you're talking about the same month that Alyssa Milano sent that tweet. You get the first public accusation against Kevin Spacey. Roy Moore was running for Senate at that time in Alabama, and the Washington Post publishes this huge story about him preying on underage girls. Louis C.K. comes out, confirms reports of sexual misconduct against him. The next month in November, Matt Lauer is fired from the Today Show after being accused of sexual assault. Charlie Rose is dropped from CBS, PBS, and Bloomberg. Garrison Keillor is fired from Minnesota Public Radio. Russell Simmons steps down from his company the same day. There are accusations against Danny Masterson, Jeremy Piven, director Brett Ratner. This is all in November. By December, you have Senator Franken resigning. Mario Batali leaves his show and restaurant. Then, of course, by the next fall, we have Christine Blasey Ford going public with her accusations of rape against Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh.
I believed he was going to rape me. I tried to yell for help. When I did, Brett put his hand over my mouth to stop me from yelling. This is what terrified me the most and has had the most lasting impact on my life. It was hard for me to breathe, and I thought that Brett was accidentally going to kill me.
You know, by most counts, over that period of time, you had 200 high-profile men accused of sexual harassment or sexual assault. 200. So many that I missed some when I was looking at this. I did not know that Morgan Spurlock came out and took responsibility for some of his behavior. Did you know that Morgan Freeman was accused of inappropriate touching and comments during this time? I did not. I missed that completely. I mean, but again, that's the volume that we were dealing with. People who seemed untouchable. I mean, you're talking about two of the three morning show hosts gone. I mean, it's you look back on it and you're like, it felt like drinking from a fire hose for a reason.
I think it's interesting to bring up Morgan Freeman and how we didn't know that because there's someone who weathered it.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I remember acutely this sense that no one would be able to weather even the slightest accusation.
Yeah.
Because the floodgates had so opened and the facts no longer mattered. Everyone was caught up in this storm. And so coming back around to look at this and to see where those accusations led to some consequence and where they were able to be weathered and dealt with. And I don't know the facts. I'm not passing any judgment on that situation. I know nothing about it. But I think it's good to remember that we didn't completely eradicate the ability of someone to continue on with life after an accusation. The movement was powerful, but it wasn't all powerful, and it certainly still isn't. I mean, Brett Kavanaugh's on the Supreme Court today.
Right. And Donald Trump was president the whole time.
I mean, we overstate in every direction the effects that we have on each other in times of change like this.
Because I also resent the coverage that's like, everybody went back to work. No, they didn't. Harvey Weinstein is in state prison. That was inconceivable. Not only is he in state prison in New York, he's on trial in California. They're going to bring charges in the United Kingdom. What the heck? R. Kelly, who got away with it one time, was acquitted, is now serving time in New York and awaiting sentencing in Illinois. Bill Cosby went to prison for 3 years, and he got out on a technicality, and it sucks. But he went to jail. Danny Masterson is on trial right now for rape in Los Angeles. Others have faced civil lawsuits, those less successfully. As we see, Kevin Spacey, he was found not liable, and of course we all know what happened with Johnny Depp. But it bothers me when there's this throwaway line I see a lot of journalists and writers take with me, too, that's like, well, you know, people went back. Matt Lauer is gone. Les Moonves is gone. Mario Batali is gone. Like, they do not have careers. No one hears from them. Others, I think you're right, with I would say, less intense accusations surrounding them, like Louis C.K. and, of course, Aziz Ansari, which I feel like was the zenith of this entire situation, are working again. They have reemerged. They have reemerged slowly. There are so many factors at play that when people say, like, well, they just didn't, they're back working and that's all that matters. I'm like, that's not fair. That's disempowering and discouraging and also not accurate.
Because justice is multidimensional. Justice is forward-looking and backward-looking and side-to-side-looking. Mm-hmm. And you do have to have some sense of proportionality. The goal of Me Too, in my mind, was never that every person who ever made any poor judgment or abused their power could no longer function as a happy, productive member of society. That is unjust. Figuring out what the backward-looking component of justice is, that's a tough exercise that we're not good at for anything. We're just not good at that in general. It's hard. It is situation-specific. And so I don't think you rack up a conviction count as a measure of this movement. And I don't know how you assess the forward-looking pieces, the prevention side, because all of these victims and survivors did not come forward to share their stories only to have the perpetrators suffer. They shared so that future generations of women don't endure this stuff. And it's hard to measure that when we've had a pandemic that kept many of us from physically being in workplaces together for a long time.
I did read that the reports of sexual harassment to the Equal Opportunity Commission are way up. So people feel more comfortable reporting. Now, some people are going to argue they feel more comfortable false reporting. And look, I'm not going to say that every single claim is accurate. I can't do that, nor would I want to. But I think the idea that people feel less alone and they feel this sense of this is a thing that happens to other people and not just me, that's success. That's success. And that's a success we have to take. It can't be that the only success is this never happens again, that every single person it happens to goes to prison for the rest of their life. And I don't think the justice system is always the best vehicle to pursue change. I don't think the corporate structure is always the best vehicle to pursue change. I think the idea that we're going to like have sexual assault and sexual harassment trainings on corporate campuses or college campuses for that matter and all be fine and dandy is also a pipe dream. We're dealing with some really complicated stuff. And honestly, I think that moment with Aziz Ansari was good and reflective of that. In some ways, I think that moment was an important zenith because we were scratching and scratching and scratching at some really, really hard stuff when it comes to sexual relationships and consent. I think we're still, and you see, like, you know, we broke apart the hardest layer, right? We got to the Harvey Weinsteins and the R. Kellys, the people we all knew were predators of the highest order. And now we're getting to, like, the harder stuff. The people like the, even the Morgan Freemans or the Bill Murray or the Dustin Hoffmans, the people who are, like, making inappropriate comments. Everybody knows they're an asshole. Maybe not a predator, but an asshole, right? And, like, that's hard. That's harder stuff to tackle. These moments where there's confusion or miscommunication and it's built on decades of misogyny and sexist attitudes about women and cultural puritanism around sex, like, we're not gonna get at that easily. It's gonna take a long time. And we're not gonna get all of it with one civil suit or one criminal suit or one corporate training.
Because it's generational.
Yep.
I can't, in my own parenting, sort out all of the factors that make up the way that I teach my daughters to speak up for themselves, just as one example. I let my daughters say no to me a lot more than most people who raised my generation think is acceptable because of this. I want them to be very certain of and confident in their own power to choose for themselves. And you can't start practicing that around sex. You know, you have to practice that in a lot of arenas to be able to do it when you get to sex. Now, as I say that, am I contributing to a sense of victim blaming? Like the idea that if we could all just be stronger and more vocal about our preferences, this goes away? I don't know. I can tie myself in knots asking questions about what I'm teaching them and why I'm teaching them those things and what it says about me and how I was raised, that this is what occurs to me coming through this moment. And that just has to be okay. I think the best I can do is say, how do I give them the tools to the best that I understand them to set them up for a life where they are respected and respectful and holding everyone's highest good at all times? But they're going to know a lot more about that when they're 42 than I do. And I hope their children know a lot more about it. And to me, I just feel really profoundly grateful to the women who have accelerated that process by sharing so much and so courageously through this movement.
Yeah, we talk about the pandemic accelerating things because that's what crises do. They create chaos and they accelerate change. And that's absolutely what Me Too did. I think, you know, forward looking from here generationally, it is hard. You know, as I was doing research for this episode, one of the leaders of Time's Up resigned because her son was accused of sexual assault. And I thought, oh, man, that is so heartbreaking. And I see all these reports and stories about how men under 30 are having less sex and teenagers are having less sex. And I think as a mother of boys, I think, well, maybe that's okay. Maybe the generational fallout here is less pressure on men to be these sexual powerhouses, to be under conquest all the time. Here's a controversial take for this Halloween adjacent episode. I think Hocus Pocus is a weird movie. Why are we talking about this child's virginity? Why are we so consumed with this boy's virginity? You know, and it's like, but it's reflective of a time. It's reflective of a generational approach to all this. And I hope that in the same way we are shifting and growing our understanding of women inside these relationships as a mother of boys, generationally looking forward, I am absolutely hoping and do my part to contribute to a shifting understanding of men inside these relationships. And not just, you know, not guardrails to keep us all safe from, again, that sort of sexist power understanding that we impart to men, but to allow more fluidity in their understanding of themselves and their roles inside these relationships, because I think we all benefit. And look, we're talking about this in a very heteronormative way, mm-hmm. even though there are lots of different stories within the Me Too movement. And I think, you know, as this new generation pushes so hard against that sort of heteronormative understanding of the world, I think, again, Me Too is a part of this accelerated conversation around gender and identity and sexuality. I mean, you can all feel it sort of breaking apart and sometimes reforming and sometimes just disintegrating. And I think that when the history is written, Me Too will be a part of that as well.
It is easy to want to get to the end of a trend. And it's especially easy because of how our news cycles and more than that, just kind of what captures the zeitgeist at any moment changes so rapidly. It's easy to feel like we have ended this movement. And I don't think that's true. Mm-hmm. I think that if you look at the past few years and you look at the issues that animate some of our most aggressive political activity, you see Me Too building on a long line of activism and cultural evolution towards greater equal rights. You see the racial protest of 2020. You see our current activism around trans rights and the backlash to that. And it all is this lineage of trying to find a way for people to truly be free and respected and cared for in their spaces. And none of that happens without a pretty big percentage of the population feeling left behind in the conversation and feeling confused about where the conversation is going and their own role as things change. And as I sense that I am getting to the older part of society demographically, and sometimes I find myself a little bit lost in where some of the conversation is around gender and sexuality, I try to ground myself in that lineage that eventually all things work toward people being freer and more respected and more able to live and feel cared for in the lives that they create for themselves. And that is just a big ask of all of us to be patient through that and to believe that that's where things are headed when there's a lot of evidence to the contrary. And I especially think about Roe versus Wade and the fact that Justice Kavanaugh had a vote in that case. But I do believe it fundamentally. And it is what gives me hope. And it is what fills me with gratitude as I think about 2017 in particular. And we're finally at my favorite time of year. Spring is here. Summer is just around the corner. We're getting our summer essentials ready. Our sunscreen, our emotional support water bottles, our steamy beach reeds. But maybe you would prefer your steamy earbuds. This year, there is a new kind of essential right at your fingertips. Enemies to love. Chance encounters, a slow burn. Friends that become more. Whatever your favorite romantic trope, Dipsy has a spicy audio story just for you. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short and spicy audio stories that bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You can discover stories about second chance romances and adventurous vacation flings. That's my favorite. Hot and heavy hookups. It can be as heavy or as light as you want it to be. This is what I love about Dipsy. It is a modern approach to romance through high-quality, captivating audio fiction that you can listen to in the privacy of your own headphones. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/pantsuit. That's dipsystories.com/pantsuit. Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves. before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
And the people who continue this work.
Beth, Halloween is mere days away. It is a candy-centric holiday. And I thought we could talk about, for Outside Politics today, our feelings. Strong feelings coming from me, I'm just going to be honest, about Halloween candy.
I'm interested in hearing your strong feelings. Mm-hmm. I want to acknowledge that since we last talked about candy on the podcast, which has been years now, my feelings have softened dramatically. Okay. And I think that is partially because the candy that I most enjoy tasting, I do not enjoy having eaten at this point in my life.
My strongest feeling is that we should segregate the chocolate from other candy. This is my number one Halloween candy-centric philosophy. The people who just store all the Halloween candy together in one container, I believe you to be monsters. You are ruining primarily the Reese's peanut butter cups, which soak up all the nasty fruit flavor from the Skittles and the other, you know, lollipops, especially the Dum Dums, because the wrappers don't stay on very good. They just make all the Reese's peanut butter cups taste wretched. And also Snickers, sometimes the M&Ms they're a stronger contender. They can hold their own. That's why you sort your candy. You get home, you sort the chocolate, you put it in its own very special container. So that is my strongest feeling. I will never shift from this. I will never shift from this. This just should be maybe like a law, maybe a legal requirement. I would be okay with that. I'm just being honest.
I think that's excellent advice. And the non-chocolate candy lasts a long time. So it's kind of nice to put that stuff away. Yeah. And pull it out, I don't know, around Easter. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. I recycle a lot of the Halloween candy
for Easter. You best believe I've got candy from the Labor Day parade ready to hand out on Monday night, and I don't feel sorry about it either. So I really, you know, I stand by my statements around Easter candy many years ago on this podcast. I'm just going to eat the chocolate. That's the situation. You know, over the course of my life, I have shifted on a lot of sort of desserts. Like, I don't want a store-bought chocolate chip cookie. Even though they are my favorite food. Like, I don't want to spend my life on that. You know what I'm saying? My very finite life energy on store-bought desserts. But I think candy is a place where you can't make it yourself. You know, you can't make a Snickers bar yourself. It is good. It is always good. Now, can I eat as much as I used to? No, I cannot. But will I eat Kit Kats and Twix and peanut M&Ms until the day I die? Yes, I will. Yes, I will, because they are delicious.
Now, I will say, I love a Snickers. And I discovered a recipe for a vegan Snickers bar that is frozen that is fantastic. It is so delicious. It's made with caramel. This is basically dates, and it's so good.
No,
so you lost good, me a Sarah. Date.
I love you. I trust you about so many things. Absolutely not. Dates, you got to be kidding
it's
me.
It's so good. I'm going to link it in the show notes so y'all can try it if you mm-hmm. like. But mm-hmm. here's the thing. Maybe my enjoyment of the vegan Snickers bar comes from the fact that I don't feel terrible after eating it. And I do feel terrible after eating even like two Snickers minis. I got to have like one bite of chocolate or I am... I feel sick now.
No, I can do. That's why I like Halloween. I like the bite size. I can have like a little bite size Kit Kat. I'm good to go. It doesn't make me feel totally crummy. I can hang with some chocolate. Oh, I just love chocolate so much. Here's another Halloween candy philosophy I would like to discuss with you. Do you have people in your neighborhood who hand out full-size candy bars?
Oh, yes, we do. And my children adore them.
I know. I want to be one of those high roller, baller people. And my husband won't let me. He's like, that is an absurd amount of money. We have so many trick-or-treaters. And I'm like, but we would be remembered forever. We would be legends.
I know.
Legends.
It's so funny when you have like the spectrum of those high rollers and then the people who are going non-candy. And I see and respect the non-candy people. I see what you're trying to do. I honor it. My children come home talking about the high rollers with the full size. Yep.
Well, and people are like, now that Felix is diabetic, are you going to do non-candy? And I'm like, no, that's not. He can have whatever he wants. He just has to have more insulin. Now, it does make my life hard, just like the perpetuation of sugar at all times and all places to celebrate all things. But I'm not mad at Halloween. Listen, Smarties are a dang medical supply in my house. I will be segregating all the Smarties and I will be taking them for our personal supply because that's how we treat low blood sugar in the Holland household is a Smartie. They call them rockets in the United Kingdom, which is an appropriate name because that is what they do to your blood sugar. But yeah, there's some that you got to be. It has got to be a strong showing. You got to spend as much or more than a full size candy bar to make a non candy Halloween treat. Please, the kitty set. You know what I mean? I'm not even sure I've encountered one. I believe there to be. I mean, nobody wants a toothbrush, obviously. Nobody wants stickers, obviously. I don't mind like a popcorn ball.
A temporary tattoo goes over well here. My kids love a temporary tattoo.
They're not going to love it more than a full-size candy bar. Can not you really
more
think?
Than, no, you can't compete no. with a full-size candy bar, I don't think.
I'm gonna put my head to it. I'm going to think, is there a thing? I want to hear from our audience. Is there a thing that could turn a head the way a full-size candy bar does?
I would like to discuss one more aspect of the candy situation. Okay. I recently had a blow pop for the first time in a very long time.
Oh, I thought you were going to say ever, and I was like, what?
No, a long time. I love gum, and I do find that the non-chocolate candies like me better than I have ever liked them. And so I had a blow pop with my children on the way to see The Descendants at the Children's Theater the other weekend. And I underestimated what it would feel like in my 40-something-year-old mouth to marinate my teeth in a bath of sugar.
Blech.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I thought it tasted good, and I loved the gum in the middle, but the process of having a sucker at this point in my life, it's over. It's just passed me by. I cannot do it anymore. It feels terrible.
No, I don't like suckers. I never did. I don't like gum. I move my jaws enough. In my everyday life, I do not need to add jaw activity. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, that's not a thing I need in my life. No, I mean, every once in a while, like a single orange Skittle will be like a little, like a fun treat. But I just, or maybe a Starburst. I don't, they're just not. My kids love gummy bears and all those, ugh.
Oh, I like a gummy bear.
I don't like a gummy bear. Now, like those really super high-end ones that aren't chewy to all.
The Albanese one I was going to mention.
Yes.
The flavors, where the flavors have really been drilled
those
down to
good.
A science.
Those are good.
They're good.
But like, am I going to choose that over a Kit Kat? No, I'm not. I'm not going to do it. And while we're on the Kit Kat tip, I need another duo. The duos are getting a little stale. I love the mint chocolate. Followed second by the coffee chocolate. I do not like the strawberry, but I need another duo. They haven't come out with some new ones. And I'm ready for another Kit Kat duo. I love those. I think they're so fun. I love a novelty, like a novelty take on a candy bar. I'm here for that.
See, I feel exactly the opposite. I'm a purist. I don't want you messing with an Oreo for anything. All of these different Oreo flavors get.
But do you not remember the pistachio Oreos? We both love the pistachio Oreos. They were delicious. And they've just disappeared.
I don't want invention around the classic candies.
I mean, I don't replace them, but I'm ready for an expansion of the universe. That's fine with me.
All right. I don't want to inhibit anyone's creativity.
There you go. How could more creativity in the universe be bad? You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Like, fair enough.
Okay.
I stand corrected. Listen, we can change our minds about things. It's fine.
That's right. Well, I'm excited. I really am excited to see if anybody's got a play for a non-candy treat that would turn the heads of a child that's like just come from a house that hands out full-size candy bars. I don't think it's an impossible task. Children have notoriously short attention spans. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not loyalists. Like, if you got something good, they will be excited. Let's see if y'all have any ideas. I'm excited about this. I want to see if anybody's got anything.
Bonus points if you can complete this quest without spending a full $1,000 for an evening of Halloween fun.
I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Friends, thank you for joining us for another episode of Pantsuit Politics. Again, we are 3 episodes out from our birthday, so we would love for you to tell 3 people in real life, perhaps while you're in the candy aisle at your local supermarket, about the podcast. And we will be in your ears next Tuesday. And until then, keep it nuanced, y'all.
Pantsuit Politics is produced by Studio D Podcast Production. Elise Knapp is our managing director.
Maggie Penton is our community engagement manager. Dante Lima is the composer and performer of our theme music.
Our show is listener supported. Special thanks to our executive producers.
Martha Brunitsky.
Linda Daniel.
Allie Edwards.
Janice Elliott.
Sarah Greenup.
Julie Haller.
Helen Handley.
Tiffany Hassler.
Emily Holiday.
Katie Johnson.
Katina Zuganellis-Kasling.
Barry Kaufman.
Molly Kors.
Lori Ladau.
Lily McClure.
Emily Neasley.
The Pettins!
Tawny Peterson.
Tracy Putoff.
Sarah Ralph.
Jeremy Sequoia.
Katie Steigers.
Karen True.
Annika Uvaline.
Nick and Elisa Valelli.
Katherine Vollmer.
Amy Whited.
Jeff Davis.
Melinda Johnston. Michelle Wood. Joshua Allen. Morgan McHugh. Nicole Berkless, Paula Bremer, and Tim Miller.
The next month in November, Matt Lauer is fired from the Today. Let me say that. I said fired with a pretty intense accent there.
I liked it, though.